Hi everyone, just popping into your ears to let you know that we recorded this episode quite a while ago. It was sort of in the thick of Melbourne winter. So if you hear us talking a little bit more about weather than usual, that's why. Enjoy.
We would like to acknowledge that this podcast meeting is being held on Aboriginal land, the land of the Wurundjeri people of the Kulin Nation, and we would like to pay respect to their elders past, present and emerging, and their multiple birth parents with children with disabilities.
And this week's episode is Chantelle, a writer, a mum of two, and you might know her as Fat Mum Slim.
This podcast contains truth, laughter, and the occasional F word, so it's not really suitable for children.
Sometimes you just have to get your shits out. Shit, 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 shit. That's right, this is a language warning. Oh, shit.
Hi, Kate.
Hi, Mandy. We're not together today.
No, you're away.
So, I am. The sound will be even worse than normal, so sorry about that.
Oh, good. We have done this through COVID, so what does it matter?
Yeah, that's right. People don't care anymore.
Like where you are.
Yeah, I am at Falls Creek, so there's not a lot of snow, but we made it. Yeah, because it's been a quite warm, dry August.
Yeah.
So, yeah, but there's enough for the kids to ski, so.
Right.
Yep, and selfishly, it's much better for me because there's no snow on the roads and I don't fall over. So everyone else is sad. I'm happy.
Well, I am here in Melbourne. It is grey and overcast as usual. So I'm auditing. Hurry up.
Yeah, it's grey here and apparently it's going to snow tonight. So everyone's doing snow dances.
Yeah.
So,
There is some blossom out, so when we know when the blossom comes out in Melbourne, everyone gets very excited. There's a lot of photos.
Yep. And the Claritine sales go through the roof.
I'm going to stop. We have a lovely guest today. You're going to find out all about her. Some of you may know lots about her already, but would you like to say hello and introduce yourself?
Hi, guys. So I'm Chantelle and I blog at Fat Mum Slim, and I've been doing this for so long, it feels like I'm a veteran in there really because I've been doing it for so long. I'm practically like an old lady. So, yes, I'm a mum of two and been blogging at Fat Mum Slim.
Yes. Mm.
Yes, and we've been following you for a long time, 15 years.
Yeah.
Sounds like you're stalking, doesn't it? I've been following you for a really long time. That's who it was.
Well, I think we had the original bloggers were very glossy and, you know, everything like the lunchbox mums, you know.
Yes.
And then we had the really negative ones, everything's bad. And then we had the ones that just kept it real. And I think you guys are the ones that have managed to stay the course.
Yeah.
Yeah, authenticity will always win.
Yeah.
Mm.
True. Mm. It's true.
Yeah.
Well, we want to talk about you. So we'll start off with our three questions.
Yeah, go ahead.
Yep. So our first question is, do you have a favourite song or a band or music that like really pumps you up in the bad times, or when you're feeling great, it's your go-to tune?
Well, it's usually whatever my kids force me to listen to. If they're not in the car, I'll usually listen to podcasts. But otherwise I love like an Adele tune or Rihanna or anything that you just are giving it your all. But I have the music up so loud I can't hear myself because I can't sing. So it's like it's loud and it's like I'm amazing. And then someone will turn the music down and be like, I am not good. But you know, so much fun letting it all out.
Yes, music's for everyone.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Love a power ballad.
I think I'll pass over my listening to music though for a little while.
Yeah.
Which is a shame.
Yeah.
I was a big music fan, but then I was like, I'm just getting all the podcasts I can.
Yes. I've done the same. And then when you put a song, you're like, this feels so good and free and my brain can just relax.
Yes. Yeah. Okay. And so our next question is, did you win any awards at school?
I was the ultimate good girl. Like I was the, yeah. Unfortunately, it came from like a trauma, like I had to be a good girl, every year I got the most proficient student in our class. So it was a little gold medal that I just was gunning for. I think one year I got the consistency in word instead. And I was just so down on myself. Like, I didn't even know what the word proficient meant back then. Like, I was seven, but I was like, I needed to get that. I knew it was the best. And then at camp, I got spick and span, and I'm not a tidy person. So that like shocked my parents that I was the spick and span award for being the tidiest. And then high school, I was the hardest working, even though it's that good girl thing again, where my hardest working, I wasn't even doing my best back then, but it was more than probably what everyone else was doing, just because that always got to achieve, got to do the best I can.
Yeah.
Got to be a good girl. Yeah.
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah. Are you an eldest child?
No, second oldest, but my sister and I are both high achievers, and my parents could not care less. Like, it's so funny. You'd bring home an award and they like loving, beautiful parents, but just weren't, you've got to do the best you can. It was just us setting our own goals and being like, we want to do amazing stuff.
Ooh,
yeah. God, I went deep, didn't I, straight away? Sorry, guys.
Oh, no, that's exactly right. That's how we do this.
Yeah.
Any blogging awards, or have you?
I got Australia's Most Clickable Woman. And that was that prize came with a $10,000 reward, and I used that money to make an app for my community. So it was a really great achievement. So we made a photo a day app, which no longer exists, but it was a really great few years where we just built this thing together, and it was amazing.
Oh, we loved it. Everyone loved it.
Yeah.
Yeah, the photo a day concept was incredible. Because everyone can in on that. It doesn't matter
what level,
you have. Yeah. Whatever, everyone can join in. Everyone can find something yellow.
Yes. Yeah, so it's still going strong. I think it's 13 years now. So, amazing community.
Oh, congratulations.
Yeah, thank you.
Incredible. Okay, and our last question is, why are you a P or part of our P community?
So I'm the proud mother of a 15-year-old who has ADHD. So that's why I'm firmly in the P community. It's been a really wild journey, like especially these last 2 years. But I've loved getting to know more about her, and I feel like the years before the diagnosis and understanding her was the before, and now we're in this after where I get to, you know, unravel every year a little bit more about her. So that's where we're kind of at with our journey.
Yeah. So true.
Yeah.
So true. Yeah. It's the before times and the after times.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And the hardest thing, like I was a nanny for 12 years before this, so I thought I had this nailed. Like, I had the routines. I knew, like, it's that good girl thing again. Like, I was the best nanny, and I thought I would be the best mum. And then my boss was like, it's going to be so different when you have kids. And I'm like, sure, I've got this. And then my first daughter was challenging, like, from the get-go, like, with sleep and everything. So I really got tested, so... it's been a ride, but I think I was given her because I'm capable and I'm patient and I love her with everything. So, it's meant to be.
I think too, like, I had three children before I had the twins with, ADHD and autism and all the other things that they've got. And I really thought that what parents did created the child, and once I had those two children, I realized they're born like that.
Yeah.
And we can give them unconditional love and patience and all the other things, but they are their own people. And so it broke me down as a parent, because I was like, oh, they're just going to do what they want, they don't care about what I want. But also was very empowering and made me just, I think the best thing about it was I just don't judge anybody else's parenting.
Yeah. And I think that the people pleaser in me, that good girl, the people pleaser, I kind of got this ballsiness about myself in these years since the diagnosis, and being like, I have to be this advocate for her, but I'm this advocate for myself as well. And I'm not afraid. Oh, there is part of me that's still afraid, but I'm so much stronger than I was in the before. Like, I am okay to stand up and tell people no. And it's really empowering and beautiful, but, God, it's exhausting too. Like, it's been a hard journey.
So can you tell us a little bit about, like, in the lead up or in the before, what how did you come to the idea of diagnosis, or was it around
the pandemic? No, it was before that. So it was in those early years when she just wouldn't sleep. I was like, I used to be the master of putting babies to sleep, and I just couldn't, and I didn't even know if this was related to the ADHD or her diagnosis, but it just was so challenging. She just woke every 40 minutes, and she just was different in a way that I think it's the dysregulation. Like, she just couldn't regulate. And so there was just things that just I found it more challenging. I kind of just along the years was like struggling. That's the only way I can explain. Like, a beautiful relationship. She was a beautiful kid and still is. But just parts of it, I was like, I don't understand what's happening, and I need no book or anything could tell me what it was. And I'm so hesitant to say something's wrong, but that's what it felt like. I was like, what's going on that I'm not getting? And so I would keep going to doctors and saying, this doesn't feel right. And they'd be like, no, it's great. And I'd go to teachers at the parent-teacher meetings, and like, she's amazing, she's great. And I couldn't figure it out. And then she did the NAPLAN and she got close to zero in everything. And I just was like, I was kind of waiting for a sign of validation, because everything else was saying, you know, she was great at masking it at school. And then when she'd come home, so safe place, it was just volatile and challenging. And I would, even though I don't believe in NAPLAN, but it just was a really great indicator for me that, yeah, maybe something's going on. So I eventually got to the point where I went to my GP, who's beautiful, and I said, I'm not going to leave until we explore this further. I need you to support me in this. And it still was challenging from that point. The teacher did all the testing, you know, how you do the testing, Connor's testing, and the pediatrician said he'd never seen such lazy responses, like just one-word responses, and it just didn't work. And so then 2 years later we tried again, and the diagnosis. And I just was so relieved. I came home, my husband was bawling, like he was like, no, like just didn't understand, and he was so upset. And I would just said, I'm not even sad, like I just feel like I can understand her now, like I'll be able to read more and figure it out and help her. Like I thought it was really beautiful. So it was this really contrast of him. He's so strong. He's a federal police officer, so he's always so stoic, but he just broke down, was like, I don't want this to be the way. But I just was so relieved, and like this peacefulness of I've got this now. Like, I've really got this. I'm not seeking the answers anymore, which you do still seek answers, but it just was this moment, pivotal moment in time. And from that moment on, I could just got to know her a little bit more, and there was such less resistance, which was so beautiful. So it's been a beautiful shift for us.
And I think we all have such different reactions to diagnosis, people who are diagnosed personally, parents, aunts, uncles, you know, grandparents. And because we were raised in a time where ADHD was like, you know, it was a current affair with kids bashing the holes in the walls, and we had no concept that there was anything positive about it. Like, it was just negative, negative, negative. It was reflected on parenting and all of those things. I mean, I've spoken about this, but in the early days I didn't tell anyone. I just couldn't say it, because I thought, I don't want my beautiful children, who are not those current affair kids, to be judged like they are. And so I'm hoping now, you know, like, my boys are 18, so they were diagnosed at 7, you know, so 10, 11 years later, I think the world is in a completely different place. But that doesn't mean we are, as parents, getting the diagnosis for the first time.
No. I think it took me about 6 months to tell people. It was that just settling in and very aware of the judgments and what people would think, because there is such stigma attached to that, and even the stigma attached to medication and the stigma attached to all the different steps that you take in the journey. But I think just owning it myself, I'm like, I actually don't care what you think, like, because this is, she's amazing, and it doesn't define her. Like, it's just part of the ride for us.
Yeah, I think that empowerment that comes is so great, and it's just such a relief, and the shackles are gone. And I think then it enables our children or our partners or whoever else has just received a diagnosis to be completely free in who they are, because they're like, oh, well, mum doesn't care. Mum thinks this is great. So, yeah, it's really – but it's such a funny thing, because we're set up in society for, you know, you go to school for this many hours a day, you sit down, you do this. There is – when you're not neurotypical and you're a divergent, how do you – we have to force our kids to fit into that. And that's where I find the pushback and the – I'm talking about my own pushback, not the kids, but like my own fears and all of that. That comes from that, not from who my children are.
Yeah. And I think we've just started homeschooling my daughter because I kind of, you need to fit in that box still for so long. I just was like, and she wanted to as well. My husband's very black and white. And then she's just been so relentlessly bullied for the last 2 years. Like I've never heard of anyone being bullied the way that she has. It's just so heartbreaking. And it's kind of like, you don't need to do that anymore. You need to be safe. But also I just see this different future for her, that it doesn't need to fit into that box anymore and we can just celebrate her. And I love that it's now that this is happening in this world where we see it differently. If it would have been happening 15 years ago, it'd be so different for her. So I'm proud that we've come so far as a community and society. Even though we've got so far to go, it's nice that we're making ground.
How did you get her through the bullying?
Oh, we're still so deep in it. Like it's we'll try not to cry, but yeah, we went to one private school and it was a really elite kind of bullying, like covert bullying with girls, and they just treated her so horribly that, you know, the principal fined her in a corner, picking at her skin and just struggling. Yeah. And it just came to the point where the school said they loved her and said, you're welcome here anytime. Like, we love you. You're a great kid, because she doesn't fight back. But just said, she's been stripped of all social status and there's nothing more we can do. Wow. So then and it was just heartbreaking. Oh. I just was sitting in that meeting and just crying and just being like, how can you just give up on her? Like, it's just so unfair.
I think my boys have had quite a lot of bullying over their life, and I think we have this really simplistic view about how to fix it. But I actually, and I know there are going to be people screaming at their podcast going, I know, but I don't know how to fix it.
No.
I don't know how, because I think it's like systemic racism or homophobia. It's a form when it's ableist, it's so ingrained, the kids don't even know why they're doing it.
No.
And I think it's, I don't know, but I think it's one of those things like where now for children, a lot of children who are like in high school, they don't have homophobia anymore. I know there are definitely cases where they do, but I know at my boys' school, everyone's accepted. But I think when it comes to kids, because I don't know what it is, but when it comes to kids being neurodivergent or there still seems to be this internalized ableism in other kids, and they just pick on them.
Yeah, just a lack of, because it's so minute, these quirkiness and this lack of social skills or not at the same level as everyone else, there's no compassion for that. There's just lack of understanding. So it's disappointing. I don't know what the answer is, and I think schools don't know what the answer is either, because we moved to the next school and it was worse because we don't live in a really small town, but enough that the kids from the old school talk to the kids from the new school, and it got to the point where went to the police last year because they were about to bash her. And the police officer that I spoke to I rang beforehand because I wanted to be a good girl. And I was just like, I've got all this. Is it worth me coming in? I don't want to waste your time. And the lady that I spoke to was like, definitely come in. Looks, we want to know this stuff. And so we went in and a male police officer came out, and he was a youth liaison officer. And I explained everything to him, showed him all the printouts that I had, the diaries, and just said, I just want her to be safe and I don't know what to do. And he said, just come back when she gets bashed. Like, that was basically.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. And then his parting words, like, we were crying. He didn't even take us into a room. So we had the perspex between us. And the last things he said to me was, and you need to go and get help for her diagnosis. And I was just like, oh, the ableism. And I was like, I do. Like, I spend $1,000 a month on getting help. Like, I am doing everything I can. Like, and then I walked out. I just was like, this, I cannot do this. No. Like. And so then it just got worse from there, really. And then we had enough to lay charges. In the last 3 months, it got really, really bad. And I just, the school just said, we failed you. Like, we cannot do any more. So, we've moved to distance education. So we're just in the process. It takes a really long time. But her nervous system is so shot, and we're just trying to get her to feel safe. And I wish that these parents could see the damage that is being done, because there needs to be more accountability and just, my husband and I are really fair. We don't want punishment for these kids because they're obviously really struggling themselves, but we just, would love compassion or educational. There has to be this shift where the parents are like, oh my gosh, I'm devastated. Let me help. What can I do? What, how can I help my kid? I don't know. There has to be a shift somewhere for this to be, to, for us to do better.
Yeah.
But as a mum, because you're thinking they're children, but these children are destroying my child.
Yes.
Mm. Yeah. I think Mandy and I have talked about and written about, like, we would love to be able to get into schools. But even if you can get into schools, how do you get that across to, like, I think it's primary school is a little bit easier because they're just so accepting. They don't see colour. They don't see, you know, disability. But, I mean, I found elements of, I wanted to quit school in year nine. Like, I, you know, when I was 15, it's a brutal time, I think, in a lot of teenagers' lives. I can only speak as someone who was a woman or a girl. I found the bitchiness insufferable and I wanted to leave. So how can anyone who's not a 15-year-old cool girl impact another 15-year-old?
Yeah. It's I don't know the answer. And I'm like, at the moment I'm saying I will change the world, but right now we need to recover and come out of this place. But I don't know. It's so frustrating that I don't know what the answer is. Like, I know one of my friends is a police officer and she's just gone into the Department of Education. There's a new role in our area and I'm not sure on the specifics, but there's more going to be more presence from them. Right. And I just don't know what the answer is, and it's really frustrating because we do need to do better, and I don't know what do better looks like. I think I'd love to tell people how to be allies, and I think that could start in that minute, how to be an ally. Like, but I know people get that ally fatigue, but what does that look like? It's just like checking in. You don't have to be with them all the time, but when they need you, just be an ally. Like, it's not that hard just to stand up for someone, just check in.
It's like Survivor in high school. So it's like, it is. Your team, then I'm going to be eaten alive. So like, for someone to be brave to stand up, it's difficult.
Oh, yeah. It is. It's so tricky. And yeah, I know I was listening to a podcast recently and they were talking about, like, misogyny in, you know, 14, 15-year-old boys who are all drawn to Andrew Tate or, you know, Joe Rogan. And we're all these mothers who are going, how could this have happened? Our partners or their dads aren't like that. We are definitely not like that, but they're still, it's so ingrained in our society, they're still drawn to it. And this podcaster was saying it's been proven the only way to get through to those boys is for another boy or man to talk to them.
Yeah.
Like, it has to come from someone that they respect. It can't be a teacher or a friend or a mother or, you know. And so, yeah, I just, like, there's little moments where I get glimmers of hope where I was like, you know, my eldest son really struggled. He's the sound engineer for this podcast. He's incredible. But school was really tricky for him. But the music department took him under their wing. And, but they were like, you can come in here every lunchtime. And all of a sudden he had these three or four friends who had nowhere else to go who were protected by the music staff. And, you know, school was hell for him. And he doesn't have friends from school, I don't think. But he got through high school because he had a safe place to be and because the music teachers are like, yeah, we recognize that music is an outlet for kids that don't have any other outlet. So that was like this glimmer of hope for me that there are pockets of society that accept you no matter who you are. And I think also I say to my kids, I think sometimes it's going to be better after school because you'll find someone who loves Dungeons and Dragons or playing Xbox or going mountain biking and you'll fit into that community and they don't care about your quirks. But at school.
Yeah it's so forced, such a forced environment, isn't it? But it's so hard to see beyond the school. Like, I've said that so many times to my daughter, like, trust me, it gets better. But she's just so in it. I think now she can kind of see that we're in this process of school's not for you, but it is really hard, isn't it? Such a forced environment that just doesn't, these mini school societies don't work for many kids, especially kids with additional needs.
Oh.
In the market for investment-worthy bags, watches, and fine jewelry, Rebag is the answer.
Rebag is a luxury resale platform where each piece is carefully inspected by experts to ensure quality and authenticity. Use Rebag to buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Louis Vuitton, Chanel, and Cartier. Head to Rebag.com and get up to 15% off your first purchase as a member with code REBAGNEW. Shop today at Rebag.com. That's REBAG.com. And use promo code REBAGNEW for up to 15% off your first purchase as a member.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
How did she go when she actually left? How, what was that like?
Well, it got to the point where she couldn't walk in the gate. Like, she stopped eating. Mm. Like, we were at the worst of the worst. And I just, the hardest bit was convincing my husband that we would have to do distance education, because he was that black and white thinker that you go to school. And I was like, the police had gone to the school and seen her crying and said, she cannot go to that school anymore. It's not safe. And I think that was that validation again. I was just said to my husband, like, I'm telling you, like, my gut, this is not okay. Like, we cannot force her. She didn't even have school refusal, because she would be friends with those bullies if they turned around and were nice to her. Like, she just loves people. Yeah, it's just that.
That just hits, because that is my children's story.
Yes.
So she will forgive them and forgive them and forgive them. Yep.
Yeah, over and over. Like, it's and I can't explain that to her. Like, why would you want to be friends with them when they do that? But this is her journey to learn. I can drip feed little bits to her, but she will figure it out herself. But I will keep her safe.
Yes.
So that's kind of where we're at, just keeping her safe and her to, like, we're pushing boundaries and letting her know what is safe, and that it's exhausting. Like, I am her security blanket. I went to Melbourne for work yesterday and the day before, and leaving her was so hard. It's like having a toddler again, that separation anxiety. She's just like, Mum, please don't go. And I'm like, I have to. So it's just the torture that these kids have put our family through is just beyond. I just would not wish it on anyone. It's horrible and heartbreaking. And there's been days where I've crawled out of bed and onto the lounge and just cried and just thought, I cannot do another day of this. More so when she was at school, I just am like, I cannot send her out to be eaten by the lions again. But she still wanted to go to school at that stage, so I needed to listen to what she wanted to do. But it has altered us. Like, my little my youngest daughter is amazing and such an ally, but she's had to become, you know, I can see her being quieter and just trying to be easier because things are so hard. So it's, this affects everyone, and it's I never would have dreamed that this would be our life. And especially having gone through, I was abused, as sexually abused as a kid, so I went through that trauma, and I just, my whole life was, you know, planned to not let my kids go through that, a similar trauma. And I'm like, I did everything I could, and here I am, and this may be even worse. And they have put that on her. And there's nothing I can do. Like, it's kills me because it will be with her for the rest of her life. And I just wish that it wasn't the way it is. And they will have will not have any accountability. Like, they will not, you know, if they, you know how people message people years after and say, I'm so sorry, I was so mean to you. And I just feel like saying to her, don't accept it. Like, that is not okay. Like, you, like, I don't know. Like, I just feel like, no, sorry, you don't get to be a, you know, we're not okay with that, but I don't know. It's just heartbreaking.
What about friends with the mums? Do you know the women in the community? What's that like?
The mums of the children? Yeah. Well, I reached out to, there was ones where they just, one night where they sent like hundreds and hundreds of messages to her saying, jump in a bath with a toaster, we're going to come bash your dad, we're going to steal your dogs, like, just horrific. And I messaged and sent some screenshots to, but one of the mums, I found her on Facebook, and she said, oh, my daughter must have been hacked. She wouldn't do that. So,
My God.
Yeah, that lack of accountability. So it's just, And I realize that talking to the parents doesn't, I never get aggressive or anything, but I'm just like, can you make this stop? But it just doesn't work. So we're just living in a cocoon at the moment, which it's just, I wish that we were talking in 6 months' time and I was telling this great story of how
we'll have you back.
Yeah. But yeah, we're so in it right now.
But actually, sharing is super powerful for our community because a lot of people listening saying this is our story too, truly.
Yeah. And there's a lot of distance education piece, a lot.
Yeah.
Because it is the only way to get through.
Keep her alive.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
It is exactly that. Like, when people are like, I haven't seen you, where have you been? Like, you haven't talked to me much or anything. I'm just like, I've been busy keeping my kid alive. Like, that's exactly what I've been doing. Yeah, and that is a lot of work. It sounds simple and easy, but it's complex.
The full time.
And I think anyone, like, when you actually pair it all back and, you know, like, I'll say to my kids, why do you want to hang around? Like, why are you hanging around with him? He is mean to you on the daily. But then I look at my own life, and even though I am fairly confident and outgoing, I, like, having come out as gay in the last couple of years and had a marriage breakup and all the other things, I too am, like, trying to fit in again and am yearning for acceptance. And I'm like, you know what? It doesn't change.
No.
And so, I mean, with an adult head, I can be like, you don't hang out with that kid, he's a dickhead. But what if it's one of the women in my friendship group and it's going to impact all the friends in the friendship group? Will I just say nothing as well? Like, it's really easy to look at it, but actually having experienced it again in the last year personally, I'm like, oh, I don't know if I'm any better. Yeah. I know I don't bully people. I know I 100% stand up for what's right. Mandy does the same thing, and it'll cost me friendships every time. That's been the gift of having my children. But I don't know if I'm that much stronger than my children.
We're human, aren't we? I think.
Yeah.
There's points where I think you're dead to me. Like, I don't need you in my life. But there's parts where I find myself just yearning acceptance. Like, and that I'm a good mum, right? Like, and I want that validation back from people. But my best friend is great. Like, she has been amazing through all of this because she will just be like, you're an amazing mum. You don't need to be told. And even just on days where she just knew I was going for a meeting, she would just turn up in her car out the front and be there for when I got out. Like, and I didn't even know she was going to be there. Like, so my circle got smaller, and I think I didn't need that validation from these people that don't matter, but the people that matter would just validate me. And it sounds so needy, but you do need that when you're going through crisis and you're just questioning everything and the world seems so horrible. It's like you just need to know that everything's okay and that you're okay. Am I doing everything the best I can? And I think we need to be easier on ourselves because
we do.
Not many people have done this journey before in the way that, you know, every journey is so different. So, yeah.
And Mandy always would say to me, which I think she's the only person who's ever said it to me, you're at your emotional capacity. And I was like, oh, yeah, I'm giving to my mum because my father passed away and she hasn't coped since. So I'm giving her that much of my emotional capacity. Then I'm giving my five children all of what they need and the twins what they really, really need. She's like, you need people to give you some. And it's really actually true. And even if people don't give it to me, I'm like, okay, that's still what I need though. I don't have to feel bad about wanting to need it.
No, that's right. We need to take that layer off and be like, this is where we're at and that's okay.
Also something really great about having a friend, your own friend, to say, I know who you are.
Yes.
I know you're in crisis right now, but I know the old Mandy or I know the other Chantel, right? And you're in crisis now. You're saving her life, but I know who you are.
Yeah.
You don't know who you are.
Yes. It's like when one night when Lacey was a baby, I was so sleep deprived that my mum and sister said, we've got this tonight. You go to mum's house and you have a sleep. And I just forgot who I was. And when I went and had that sleep, and the bed was the softest bed I've ever slept on, and the pillow was just amazing. And then I woke up the next day and I went back to the house and I was so excited to see the baby. And I was cracking jokes and I was so funny. And I was like, this is who I am. Like, I just remembered who I was and I had that glimmer. And I have moments where I just remember who I am in this present parenting stage. But I feel like it's been a while, but I know that she's still there, but it's just this tiptoeing out of this stage, and I'll figure out who I am again. But my friend reminds me of that, because we'll just call and not talk about the kid stuff, but just talk about, you know, top level stuff and laugh and just, it's nice. Cause I've got this really cheeky side when we go out and stuff. She's like, there she is. So yeah, she's still there.
I know. I said to my therapist the other day, I am fun. I'm a fun person. And she's like, I'm sure you are. But I'll share this with you. I think I've already shared it on the podcast, but she sent me a list of like 80 values of characteristic values, things that you value in yourself. And she said, get a highlighter, see what you value in yourself, see what the people around you value. Do they line up at all? These people who you're trying to get acceptance from, or your kids are trying to, you know, their families, is it worth you fighting for that? Because are your values the same? And it was just like this big epiphany that I was like, yeah, I can find people, and it's really tricky to do it for our kids, but we can find people whose values line up, because that actually, that is just what creates kindred spirits, I think.
Definitely.
Having said that, then, do you have any friends with children with ADHD?
I don't have that many, actually. So it is a very isolating thing. Like I think that was really challenging, because I'd see these kids get these awards for so many different things, and I love those kids and I'm so proud of them, but it just was like that created some of that internal, and I don't want to use that language, but it's the only way I can really describe it, is what's wrong. Like when everyone's achieving all these things and my kid is not, I just, it was very isolating. Like I've never felt so alone in such a busy world. I just felt like, why is this so different for me? But,
Which is why we started this whole podcast.
Yes.
Because we felt exactly the same. So every time I see, you know, 20,000 downloads or something, I think there's 20,000 people out there who feel like this.
Yeah.
So there actually is a community, but it's much harder to find them.
Yes, it is. Do you know that Alice in Wonderland quote where she says, "What, you too? I thought I was the only one." And I feel like that's what this is about. It's like you're living in these little isolated little bubbles, and then you find two peas and you're like, oh, my people, I'm not the only one. And it's just that beautiful moment where you realize there's a community here. My more has been through reaching out and talking online and sharing stories, and people in different stages of the journey will come and say, oh, I'm going through that too. And it's just so beautiful, and it's like you just start to breathe, like I am not alone. It's so calming, like even though we're in those struggles, but we're not alone. But it would be nice to have someone in person to go through the same thing with. But
that's
how it is. Doing any extracurricular things? Does she play sport or?
Yeah, she was playing netball, but there was some personality things, so we stripped that back as well. But she does equine therapy, which she really, really loves, and that's her jam. I last year we were doing lots back when I saw that police officer and he said, go and get some help for a diagnosis. I was doing OT and then social skills workshops and then psychologist and equine and a few other things at school. And I just started to think, it feels like maybe she's a problem that needs fixing, and all these things are making her feel like she's a working, you know, something that needs to be fixed. So then I kind of just talked to her and said, what do you love? What do you want to do? And we stripped it all the way back to equine therapy, and we'll probably add a psychologist back into it now with all this trauma. But that was one of the best decisions I made. Like it, not even as a financial thing, because it doesn't matter. I would do whatever it took, but I saw her just relax into it.
Yeah. And there is a real, that's the problem with how school and society is set up, that we want our children, whether they have a disability or not, to fit into this little, you know, box. And loads of us don't. Like I spoke too much at school, I didn't fit into the box, but because for the most part I was typical or whatever, I got away with it, right?
Yeah.
And because I could read a room really well, you know. So, yeah, I just think if a therapy is only to change you so that you fit into school, that's one thing. But if therapy helps you love yourself,
Yes.
And we all have, you know, I say my daughter's a pediatric OT and we have big discussions about this and she's very against changing people. But she's like, we all have social settings, Mum, where, you know, if you walk into a room and everyone's in a suit and they're all very somber, you immediately switch and go, okay, I've done this before. People don't want me to be joking here. Maybe someone's, something very serious has happened. So they are life skills that are really well worth learning, you know?
Yeah.
But I, yeah, she's like, I never want to cramp who somebody is. So I think we're, I think therapy's catching up, but yeah, I don't want my kids to get a therapy that wants them, makes them change.
Yeah. I think it feels like childhood is this ticking clock that you have to get all this stuff sorted before we let them out to be into the real world to adults. And it's like, I just felt like I was ticking boxes, like the good girl thing, like doing everything that should be done. Mm. And what's everyone else doing? Oh, people are doing OT, let's do that. But it felt right, but I feel like now feels right even better. Like it's the therapist at the Equine Therapist is amazing and quirky and just celebrates who she is and just gets her. Right. Those people are amazing. Everyone,
they are. I was going to say the wrong thing, but they're their own breed. They're fabulous.
Yes.
Horse people.
Out of the box thinkers and just.
Anyone. They just love their horses. And I love them for the help in my family too.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah, she's got alpacas and just this little bevy of all these little animals. And it's amazing. And she's just the best person in the world.
Oh.
Mm. Yeah. And I think there's the realization, and it's really hard for parents, it's really hard for me now, that if our kids can have one friend or one after-school activity that they enjoy, it's actually enough. And while I say that, I know that there are loads of times when our kids won't have one friend. And for me, that has been the hardest part of the whole journey because, like, you're saying, I've got my one friend. I've got my one best friend, Rachel. And she just stands by me and she's there and she helps me. How can I handle if my kids don't have that one friend?
Like,
you know, but I really am very hopeful that in the long run there will be that one friend that they find and we don't need a big wide net. I think it's hard for me, but I think I think accepting that one friend or one activity is a really good thing is actually priceless.
Yeah. Yeah, letting go of that expectation of wanting all those friends. Yeah, my daughter's got one beautiful friend. So, it's what she needs right now. And I think it'll be different once she leaves that age of school, like once she discovers new things. And once we're out of this healing, I think we'll try new things. But one day at a time is kind of my motto at the moment.
Oh, absolutely. 15 minutes at a time mostly.
Exactly. It is like that on most days it is.
Education, has she found subjects she likes? Has she found new subjects?
So we're still in the process. We've enrolled and the guidance counselor, we've had an interview with her, but she said it takes weeks and weeks. So we actually won't start until the end of term. So it kind of feels meant to be that we're just
resting.
Healing. Yeah. So she's so hungry to learn, which is exciting because she's not an academic kind of kid, but she's like, Mom, make me some work. So it is like this transition stage, but one day at a time and see what happens. But I think she will, even when I spoke to the guidance counselor, she was asking, what does she like? And I just saw this out of the box thinking, she's like, oh my gosh, you could do horse husbandry and rural services. So it just made me think, oh my God, anything is possible. So I'm so excited. Like I think I kind of scared the guidance counselor that I was so excited. She's like, okay, let's go easy. But I just
I'm not
ready. Yeah. I just was like, oh my gosh, I can't wait. And she's like, well, it takes a while. So just sit down and wait. Yeah.
So if you could tell the P community and the wider world, and maybe even some of the mums that used to be at the school about your beautiful, beautiful daughter, what are the amazing things about her that you would tell the world?
Oh, the kindest, most empathetic person, even before she'd been all through all this. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, when you can tell a person by the way they treat animals, like she is just so beautiful. And being able to have that pivotal moment where she was diagnosed, just to stop and just see who she is and not who I expected her to be. It's just been life-changing because she's amazing. Like, if you ever needed help, if she walked past you, she would feed you, she would give you kindness and love. And that is such a beautiful thing. Despite all that she's been through, they have not made her harder. She has stayed soft. So I think that's who she is. She just will change the world, and my youngest will as well, because she's seen what she's been through. Like, my kids are the kindest, most beautiful. And, of course, they've got teenage moments, but, I just think they make the world a better place. So we're lucky to have them. And, despite what they've been through, the world is better with them here.
Mm. And just to give you some hope, my partner is a psychologist who deals with a lot of trauma patients or clients. And she's like, when there's this love and acceptance at home, the kids do heal. Like, it changes who we are. And she's like, we're all different from trauma. That's how we grow, sadly.
Yes.
I don't want to grow that way either. But I think that with good therapy and the equine therapy and whatever else, she'll never forget that this was her high school. Like, how can she?
Yeah.
But I think that we can have hope that, she will heal.
Yeah. And I feel the same way with my childhood trauma. Like, it was the most horrific thing, and it has altered who I am. And sometimes I feel sad that it's changed me so dramatically, but also I love who I am, and I don't know that I would be this person if it didn't happen. So I'm so grateful, which sounds really odd, but I love who I am, and I'm grateful for the lessons I've learned and the softness that I bring into the world, because I see it differently, maybe because of that trauma I experienced, but I'm a better person because of it, even though I wish that it never happened, which is such a contradiction, isn't it? Like, but I hope that she feels that way too, that yes, it was shit, yes, it was the hardest thing that she's ever been through, but she is a better, more empathetic, more kinder person because she's seen that side of the world.
And her mum had and in different ways.
Yeah, God, it's so hard to be suddenly thrown into being an advocate, isn't it? That's the hardest thing, like, just But
I know that time. Yeah, there needs to be advocate school. You're like, right, I'm going to download that app, find out how to do this, because it starts today.
Or a little chocolate bar that you eat that's like, right, you ready for this? Like, let's go.
We call it power eating. We're like, we're going to power eat today.
Yes, we need this. We deserve this.
Yes, we really do.
Yeah, tricky days, I would just like straight through Macca's drive-thru. Shower, cry, and then it just became rituals on those days.
Yeah. Oh, how good is a shower cry?
Oh, you have to, because then you come out and you're bright red and they can't tell.
Yes. Yeah.
To the best.
Yeah. The best.
The best.
Oh, goodness. Is there anything we have missed that you want to tell our world?
No, I'm so grateful that when I started talking about my daughter having ADHD and the challenges that I was facing, the first things that people said was, you need to become part of the 2Ps community. And I think I'm so grateful for that reaching out, and that it just was this collective hug of, come with us, like, we are here for you. I just want to say thank you, and thank you to all the parents at part of the 2Ps community, because the best community in the world, really open-minded, and a collective hug is what I feel like they are, just like these embraced arms where you feel so isolated. It's open arms instead of the closed arms that you usually get in these environments. So, thank you for all the work that you guys do.
Our
life too.
Incredible.
Well,
thank
you so much. We will send everyone your way that is not already a fan of yours, but I think most people in Australia and the world know about you as an awesome blogger as well, just from your early days. So everyone will follow you even more. Get ready for some more pee love.
Yeah, thank you. I'm here for it.
Yes.
All right, so we just want to send you our encouragement from Kate and I, that you're doing an awesome job, that you are the best mum for her.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
Every day I say, Mandy, keep going. That's what you're doing. Okay?
Yeah, thank you. Thank you so much.
Thanks.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you so much, guys.